You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production in association with City News.
At this rate, I will get my fourth shot of a COVID-19 vaccine before my four-year-old daughter gets her first one.
Ontario's plan for fourth doses of COVID-19 vaccines.
400,000 Albertans will soon be able to get an additional dose to increase their protection from COVID.
I'm not mad about this. I'm not saying this to be critical of vaccinations or because I don't want to be vaccinated. I will happily take my shot once again when it's my turn. But I do understand the questions that some people who have willingly taken three shots are asking right now. After all, when they were asked to get vaccinations number one and number two, they were told that doing so would get things back to normal. More than that, we even called two shots fully vaccinated. And clearly time and the virus have proven that wrong. So what happened to our initial plan for vaccinations? And how has it changed over the past year? Could a new targeted vaccine, expected this fall, put an end to endless boosters? Did we get our messaging wrong about vaccines in general a year ago? And how do we now make sure that vaccine hesitancy around the COVID shot doesn't spread to the shots that we've all been giving our children for decades? Oh, and speaking of the little kids, weren't we supposed to be vaccinating them too with at least one shot by now? What happened there? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Sabina Vora-Miller is a clinical pharmacologist. She combats vaccine hesitancy in her daily work. She has been our expert on COVID vaccines since before any of us got a single shot. Hi, Sabina.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
As always, we are grateful. The last time we discussed boosters, they were just rolling out the first boosters in Ontario and other provinces. It's only been a few months since then. We are already giving second boosters to many people. What happened there?
Yeah, so I mean, third shots or, you know, the first booster is really, really important. If you look at the data we have, as well as, you know, the Ontario Science Table risk for hospitalization, one or two doses of the vaccine still puts you at a higher risk of being hospitalized. You know, also the other thing we need to remember is that a number of vaccines are actually three doses. So we were initially hopeful that two were going to be sufficient. But, you know, as immunity has waned, as we have new variants, it's become a lot clearer that really this is a three-dose vaccine series, as, you know, similar to many other vaccines that we have currently on the market. So there's absolutely no debate on the importance of a first booster dose, especially against Omicron. That said, additional boosters after this point, so after the first dose, there is a diminishing rate of return, specifically, you know, for those who are otherwise not immunocompromised, not, you know, older, not living in a high risk setting, such as a congregate setting. So what we're seeing that, you know, we have some data that shows that people who had three doses of a vaccine versus those who had three doses and an infection, the level of antibody titer increase with the fourth exposure wasn't as large in your typical immunocompetent person. So, you know, while we do see a decrease in symptomatic infections with boosters, what we're seeing is that vaccine efficacy against symptomatic illness is much lower for Omicron. But importantly, at this point, even the first booster is helping prevent hospitalizations remarkably well. You know, I mean, again, once again, look at the Ontario Science Table's risk threshold guideline. A 70-year-old person with three doses and less than three risk factors still has less than a 5% risk of being hospitalized. So it's showing us that the vaccines are working incredibly well. Whereas with one or two doses, a single risk factor puts that same 70-year-old at a higher risk of being hospitalized. So, I mean, the landscape has changed a little. What we're seeing is that the first booster dose is exceptionally important. And I think the second booster dose at this point is really intended for those, you know, who require that extra bump, that extra push. Could be because of them being immunocompromised. It could be because they're much older. It could be because of a high risk setting. But for the vast majority of us, the three doses are working really well.
That's great to hear. And you know from all our conversations that I am not knocking the effectiveness of vaccines here in any way. I will get myself a fourth shot if it becomes available to me and they say I should get it. But I want to talk to you a bit about the messaging, because you communicate this stuff to people in an effort to get vaccine hesitant people to get the shots. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked about before is the criticisms that some people have of the messaging around, well, get this shot, now get this shot, now get this shot. And anti-vaccine people use that as an excuse to say, look, they're always going to be telling you to get a shot. There's going to be another one, and you're going to be getting a shot every 2 months. So at what point then do we have a benchmark for saying, enough is enough. You got your three shots, or you got your three shots plus your first booster, and you're as protected as possible, and that's fully vaccinated, and you're good, because we have seen the uptake of boosters be much less than the first couple of shots, and I wonder if that's part of the reason why.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a great question, and it is tricky, right? And my personal belief here is that many countries are sort of staying tight on additional boosters, not only because of that rate of diminishing returns, as I mentioned, but also because it feeds very nicely into the entire anti-vax rhetoric, as you mentioned, right? I mean, I know people who are otherwise vaccinated who have told me that they don't want to keep getting more and more vaccines. So really, we need to be exceptionally smart with our strategy over here. You know, as you said, uptake of first boosters is still low. And I think that, you know, we need to be using other public health strategies for the next few months that can tide us until we have an Omicron-specific vaccine, the bivalent vaccine that I'm happy to talk about as well. And I think that we will get a lot more out of that booster. And I suspect the uptake would be much higher as well, knowing that this is a vaccine that is targeting really the variant that we have right now. If we are going to be offering second boosters to the entire population, it has to be with a targeted vaccine. Moderna just released that data from their bivalent vaccine, which combines the existing vaccine with one that is specifically designed against the Beta variant. Now, that's taking you back. Beta variant was sandwiched right between Alpha and Delta and sort of was circulating around end of 2020, beginning 2021. And what they found was that this combination vaccine produced more than two times the level of antibodies against Omicron compared with those who got just the booster dose of the existing Moderna vaccine. And you know, the reason really for this is because Beta, in fact, carries a lot of the mutations that Omicron has. What they're hoping actually, in fact, for fall of this year is having an Omicron-specific bivalent vaccine. So the next generation of this bivalent vaccine is not going to be Beta plus current, but it's going to be Omicron plus current. You know, and so I think that what we need to be doing right now is making sure that we're playing our cards right on this. We have a good strategy in place and tight messaging plus myth busting, so that when we have that targeted booster, that's when we invest all of our energy to make sure that there is a high uptake of that booster.
I want to talk to you about that booster in just a moment, but first, one more question on the messaging. I know hindsight is 2020 here, so this is not me picking on anybody in public health communication, but I want you to think back to when vaccines first arrived and we were trying to get people to take them, and a lot of the messaging was around, you know, get your shot, get your life back to normal. And we also came up with the phrase for two shots, fully vaccinated. And we even had vaccine passports made saying, you know, two shots meant you were fully vaccinated. Do you think that the way we pushed people to get vaccinated and get done with this thing overpromised on what they were getting? And that's why the third shot uptake is comparably low. If we could go back, would you change the way we spoke about the initial two shot vaccines?
You know, I mean, that's tricky. If you actually look at the original vaccine against the original virus, I mean, when it first came out, we had a 90% efficacy, even 6 months out against symptomatic illness, right? And nearly 100% against severe illness. If that was the variant we were still dealing with right now, then yeah, actually life would have been back to, you know, January 2020 normal. So the way I look at it, it's not a vaccine thing. It's a humankind sort of messed up big time kind of a thing, you know? And that's the thing with uncontrolled spread. You always risk emergence of new variants. And currently, Ontario is still tracking at 100,000 cases per day, and other countries have declared COVID is over. So, I mean, we're at a point that we are at a high risk of having new variants developing. And it's, to be honest, I've been talking about global vaccine equity, you know, like since the time that the vaccines were first released in December 2020. When the world and the rest of the world is not vaccinated, but your high-income countries are vaccinated, what is that going to do? That's going to result in more and more variants. And that led to Delta and now Omicron. And so truly, it's our short-sightedness, you know, the lack of ability for us to look at our global neighbors and fight for vaccine equity that sort of caused the situation. So I feel, you know, I feel badly that vaccines are getting blamed for this when really the reason we're in this predicament right now is because of the way that we have sort of reacted to public health, protective public health measures, and the way we've actually decided that once we were vaccinated, COVID is over. And that's just simply not the case. And so, you know, I'm not sure the messaging was incorrect, because when the messaging first came out, we were in a different landscape. And right. had we actually really pushed for vaccine equity, kept protective public health measures in place until then, I think we would have been in a much different spot right now.
So with all that said, then, let me ask you about the Omicron-specific vaccine that you mentioned Moderna is planning. First of all, when is that expected to be available? I guess the thing that I've seen briefly reported is the fall. But just to tie it to the last question, we are obviously still not doing that stuff. There is still vaccine inequity in other parts of the world. There is still uncontrolled spread right here at home, even if it's not overwhelming our hospitals at the moment. So, you know, are we putting ourselves in a position where we're all going to be told to get the Omicron-specific vaccine this fall, and at the same time, the way we're handling the pandemic here and around the world is creating another variant so that we do this same dance next year? I don't ask this question to be cynical, just it's been 2 and a bit years and I've seen a lot by now.
No, I mean, I think I'm there with you on the cynicism right here. Going back to your question on the Omicron-specific bivalent, yes, so the plan is that for fall of 2022, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, we should have that bivalent Omicron-specific booster available. Moderna just released their beta bivalent data. It looks really good. The Omicron-specific one should look equally, you know, as good or even in fact better. So I am very hopeful that when we are going to see, you know, in a couple of months' time, again, immunity waning from both vaccines as well as infections, we're going to see, you know, another resurgence of COVID.
Great.
And hopefully we have a better suited vaccine for it. The issue is whether it's still going to be as effective or not. And that, you know, I wish I had a crystal ball, but I don't. Mm-hmm. So I can't really say what we're going to be contending with, you know, come this fall. I think that people who claim that the new variants are going to be less severe are frankly just making things up. I mean, it must be nice to live in this world of illusions, but right. we have absolutely no way of knowing this. And meanwhile, we're still having uncontrolled spread, you know, not just here in Canada, but if you look at it across the globe, it's, you know, many countries are currently struggling with COVID cases. And so there's a very, very good chance we're going to have a new variant before fall of this year. And what remains to be seen is how effective our vaccines are. But again, I mean, it comes down to path dependence. You know, we keep making the wrong decisions and hoping for different outcomes. And, you know, and it's just fool me once, you know, shame on you, but fool me twice, shame on me, right? And so we keep doing the same thing, expecting different outcomes. And I don't understand why anyone would be surprised if we have a new variant before fall comes. So, I mean, I'm there with you on being cynical about this entire situation.
Okay, let's try something optimistic then. Science, wonderful science, and the speed with which these vaccines are developed, and assuming we're still getting better at that, what are the chances that we can improve that system so that it doesn't take what looks to be, I guess, about 10 months since the emergence of Omicron to have a variant-specific vaccine? Can we cut that time down? Are we learning enough in this process to be able to respond quicker to a new variant with a vaccine that targets it?
Absolutely. And so I think that really is the advantage of mRNA vaccines, that we're actually able to do this a lot quicker. You know, I think originally when we had Delta and we had Omicron, you know, really quickly right after, the issue is if we keep having variants moving quicker than we can possibly do the research, we're going to be in a bit of a bind. So I think it's going to be really important for us to make sure that we're trying to use protective health measures and so that we can buy time for this. I think 10 months, we will be able to reduce that time frame. We do it for influenza every year. So I think we are, you know, going to be in a position where we can actually pivot really quickly to new variants. And we'll, okay. You know, I think that as we have new variants, as COVID evolves, as our knowledge about it changes, we should be able to move a lot quicker. So that is definitely my hope. And my other hope, and you know, truly as a science nerd, the thing that I'm really excited about is actually having a pan-coronavirus vaccine. Right. So that means it's actually a vaccine that targets all coronaviruses, right? We have multiple, many different types of coronaviruses. Many of them are, you know, your basic common cold, but then you also have things like MERS that is still spreading in some parts of the world and has been for the last few years. And we have nothing really against that. And so if we have a pan-coronavirus vaccine, it targets essentially all of the coronaviruses. And so right now, there are several that are currently either in preclinical development or they're actually in early clinical trial phases. And so I actually hope that in the next few years, we would have this pan-coronavirus vaccine. And I think that is going to be a huge game changer. And it's the one that I'm really, really excited about.
Shifting gears from people who are being asked to get their fourth shot to little people who have not yet had one, we've been talking, you and I, for the better part of a year now, I think, about when vaccines for under fives would be approved. Why haven't any of them been approved? And is there still a timeline, or are we now just kind of like hoping for new data sometime and a decision to change?
You know, I mean... I don't understand why there is no urgency to vaccinate our under fives. I don't get it. The only thing I can think of is that they don't vote. So, you know, for some reason or the other, it seems like they've been really, pushed right behind in terms of priority. And I don't get it. Mm. And I also don't get it, especially as a parent of a young one. If things go well, so, I mean, we hit a bit of that snafu in our timelines with Pfizer last year when the two doses, you know, didn't have very encouraging data. So now they're trying the same dose, but with the third dose added into the regimen. So, I mean, in terms of timelines, if things go well, then we are actually very close. But again, I mean, I've been seeing this for 6 months. And so, I don't have a crystal ball, so it's hard. But Moderna did release their preliminary data end of March, which means that they're expected to actually file with Health Canada sometime very, very shortly. And that means that if they were approved and there's no concerns that were raised, we should have this vaccine approved by end of June here in Canada for Moderna for under six. Pfizer is the one that I'm not entirely sure about. I really want to see what this data is going to look like for the three-dose regimen. I have heard the CEO of Pfizer saying that we are going to be seeing some of this data come out by around June. But again, I don't want to speculate on what the data is going to be. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed on this, but I don't want to speak too soon.
Fair enough. A personal question that's for me, obviously, but for a lot of parents I know in this age group. If we have children who are, let's say when June rolls around and this vaccine gets approved, a couple of months away from turning five, should we get them their under fives vaccine or wait for what, as I understand it, is a bit more potent vaccine for the 5 to 11s?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky question. And I think it really depends on a few different things. So first, what does the data look like? So for example, with Moderna, the 25 microgram dose that is being offered for under six, I mean, looking at their immunobridging data where they compare this dose this dose in under six to the regular dose for adults, they actually found that the antibody thresholds, the levels of antibodies were similar in the two groups. My son was in the clinical trial for this Moderna dose, and he was recently unblinded when he turned five. And I personally feel very confident about this dose in the under six population.
Okay.
For the Pfizer three dose, I still need to wait to see what the data looks like. I think my response is going to vary a lot based on what that data is going to look like. It has to be efficacious for me to feel confident about it. And then the other aspect is understanding what the case counts look like. You know, what will we seeing come July, you know, end of June, July, August? Are we still going to be seeing 100,000 cases per day? I mean, I feel this is going to be extremely unlikely in the next few months. Our numbers are expected to go down, you know, for the summer. And plus, I feel school is out. So that means exposure risk is also going to be lower. And then another consideration is whether the child has had a recent infection or not, right? And so again, like there are many different variables here, but if case counts were high, exposure risk is high, and the child has not had a recent infection, my opinion is still to get vaccinated as soon as possible. And again, you know, with Moderna, what I'm seeing so far with the data, I haven't seen the full data set. They haven't released the entire thing yet. But what I've seen so far, the data looks very, very promising. And the antibody levels were actually similar to adults. So I would have absolutely zero concern with Moderna for under six at this point, at least.
One of the last things I want to tackle with you is, again, about communication and messaging around vaccines in general, something I've been seeing a lot of recently. I read a lot of American media as well as Canadian to try to make sure I know what's going on to the south of us. And there is a big push right now to turn the anti-COVID vaccination movement into the anti-vaccination in general movement, you know, using places like schools that aren't requiring COVID vaccines to attend to set a precedent, saying, well, then you shouldn't need an MMR vaccine to attend or a polio vaccine or whatever it is. Have you seen any of that push in Canada? Should we be concerned about the anti-COVID vax movement pushing further along towards the anti-vax in general movement?
Yeah, I mean, I have been hearing a lot of this, and it's not surprising to me at all. We've had a lot of discussions over vaccines, and that's made people consider all the routine vaccinations that we are currently receiving. And given how fast moving this anti-vax movement is, I would be lying if I said I wasn't concerned. You know, I mean, I was talking about vaccine hesitancy being an issue with COVID vaccines in November of 2020 before we even had the vaccines launched. And, mm-hmm. And I remember at that time people looking at me like I had 10 heads because they simply could not like fathom the fact that there would be any vaccine hesitancy. But, you know, as someone who has spent a lot of time on not just vaccine hesitancy, but also evidence-based parenting groups and social media, the movement has been increasing pace at an alarming speed over the last decade. You know, we simply cannot underestimate how big of a threat to public health vaccine hesitancy is. And I think, you know, we've done a really great job of shoving vaccine hesitancy under the rug for all these years, and it's blown up in our faces come COVID. And so I definitely think that this is going to be a huge, huge public health issue. And we need to be investing a lot of time and resources and energy into building education, myth busting, building that foundation of vaccines and why it's so important from the ground up. You know, I mean, as to give you an example, even with the boosters, you know, I've had a couple of conversations with people wanting to understand what exactly is their hesitation with getting their first booster dose. I'm talking about the third shot for most people. And there's so many misconceptions that just get thrown around. You know, I've heard from those who are otherwise fully vaccinated, you're hearing things about immune exhaustion, you know, like, oh, is it going to be, you know, bombarding your immune system constantly, and that is that going to cause an issue with your immune system just being exhausted? And that is not true, right? And so that does not happen with boosters unless you're giving these boosters like, you know, every 1 or 2 weeks, which we're not. We also don't have concern with antibody-dependent enhancements. So that's when vaccines or infections make the next infection more severe. And again, this is completely unfounded. And then, you know, I've also heard about things that the vaccines were designed around the original COVID virus. And so could that make a person's immune response so narrow that it doesn't recognize variants? And again, this is completely theoretical, not supported by evidence. And so I'm hearing a lot of these concerns that can easily be debunked, that can easily be, you know, have some really, really good education campaigns to try and combat some of these, you know, misinformation and some concerns and some apprehensions that are sort of floating around. But I don't see people doing this work. I don't see people talking about it. I don't see public health talking about it. So again, we have to be proactive. We are hearing this already from people. We're seeing it floating all around. And if we wait until, you know, things sort of hit the fan and then try and counter it, it's just going to be way too late, because you've already, that seed that was planted is now, you know, a full grown tree, and it's going to be a lot harder to try and come around. Whereas when it's still at a little seed level, you actually have a lot more impact where you can change minds. You can actually educate people. So it's going to be a huge issue. I won't lie. It's been a concern of mine for many years. We need to be doing a lot more.
Sabina, thank you for this, as always.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure.
Sabina Vora-Miller is a clinical pharmacologist. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca or talk to us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. If you have something to say about vaccines or anything else, or even better, you have a topic you think we should cover, write to us at hello@thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can listen to us on any podcast player. You can ask for us on any smart speaker by saying play The Big Story Podcast. And like I always remind you, if you are on a platform that lets you say something nice about us, do it, because one of the people who works on this show will probably see it one day. Stephanie Phillips is the lead producer of The Big Story. Joseph Fish and Braden Alexander are our associate producers. Efwa Mufwodo has been our intern for the past 4 months, and we will miss the heck out of her. Thank you, Efwa. Thank you, folks, for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Have a safe weekend. We'll talk Monday.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.